You're listening to the Slavic Literature Pod, your shelf help guide to all things Slavic.
I'm Cameron Lalana.
And I'm Matt Gerasimovich.
And today we're talking about part two, chapter 37 of Vasily Grossman's Life and Fate. Continuing on with, as Matt said directly before we began recording, Comrade Creamy and his return to Stalingrad in somewhat less heroic, in a somewhat less heroic situation this time. Instead of coming to the front line to raise the proper Bolshevik spirit among the fighting men, he is instead there to attend the 20th or the 19th anniversary of the
25th. I thought
25th might be the 25th. I did not pay attention to that number. Probably Matt's right. He wrote the post, so he would know. Meeting, which is happening in Stalingrad, so they are soldiers are bringing some party representatives, big wigs, up to it's not really the front line, but you know, close enough across the river onto the right bank to give a speech to some of the soldiers and workers in a factory there, which you know goes along pretty well, I think, as far as events go. And is there anywhere in this event that you'd like to begin?
Yeah, just on how kind of silly I thought the whole thing was. I think it's a really peculiar instance within the Soviet Union where it's just still really hard to fathom how important these kind of events were. And it just kind of seems like maybe they could have used their resources differently at this time to I don't know, fight the war. But then again, they won. So who am I to criticize, I guess?
Right.
Just the guy with the podcast is all.
You got the podcast. I mean, isn't that what the Soviet Union was made out of? Just podcast guys?
Pretty much. I mean, unfortunately, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because we now see, reading this chapter, we see how out of step with the party that Krimov is. Or maybe we should say the party in some ways might be out of step with Krimov, because this whole time, as we begin this party conference, Krimov is like ecstatic. As these party representatives are being escorted under the cover of darkness into the factory by soldiers, he feels electric. He feels like it's back in 1917. He's among all the comrades and he's ready to, you know, throw up his cap and, you know, shout, "Comrades, soldiers, brothers, to hell with this war and its blood. Long live freedom." And in that case, that line coming from Priyakin, who is giving the speech at this conference, was referring to World War I. So it feels like a bigger, better time. And he is seeing, you know, his comrade Priyakin, who he fought alongside once. And oddly, you know, Priyakin is not really paying attention to him, except for one time when he happens to ask him about Getmanov. And, you know, Krimov says, "I think I've met him. I seem to recall at least once or twice. And then why do you ask?" And Priyakin says, "No reason," which, you know, another interesting feature of the Soviet Union to Krimov, very innocent question. To us as readers, we know that very well might not be so innocent.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's probably not. And we have, when we come to this speech, right, and we know that Priyakin has not always been a sort of, not a great speaker, right? We know that he has passion in it because Krimov remembers the passion that he had back towards the Civil War during the time of World War I. But instead, he the front lines on the Battle of Stalingrad, on perhaps the most important political battle of the entire war in the European theater, Priyakin gives a speech on grain productions and how it's down in the Stalingrad, in this region, in this oblast. But that's understandable because they're part of the war region. And and Krimov like looks at him and immediately, you know, he like all passion drains from him. And he's like staring at him and he thinks it was the very coldness of his speech that confirmed just how absolute the state's triumph, just how absolute was the state's triumph. So we have, when I say the party's out of step with Krimov, right, we are moving from a revolutionary time of you know, destroying the old and bringing in the new, now to the just building the new, which for the party at this current time is the quota, you know, whatever Gosplan has put into place, and then fulfilling those quotas regardless of what, you know, regardless of what's going on, although there's certain allowances made, such as if there is an act of war going on. Of course, we understand if you don't make your quotas this time, right?
Yeah, but don't let it happen again.
Yeah. You better wrap this war up pretty quick. So that's the other quota is the winning the war quota, which you better be on track with.
Yeah, I think that Primov really has just come to represent the sort of Bolshevik who is very disillusioned with what he has created. And I think it is difficult, and actually for him, I think it's impossible for him to reconcile with the fact that he is has been somebody that has caused this to happen, and that he is still part of it. He's still causing these things to happen. And he really, like I said, I just don't think he really identifies very well with being a party functionary, but at the same time, he wants that power because he wants to impose how he thinks things should be done. And so he's a very interesting character in that regard, and one that I think is on a crash course for nothing good at the moment. Doesn't okay. really look like he is setting himself up for success.
No, not quite. I think you've talked on more than one occasion on how one of the seeming differences, although between the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany, although the two are often compared, in this case, I think it's a relevant comparison, the way the state plays this overbearing role in both societies. And of course, of case of the, you know, Nazi Germany, we see that well through Liss's perspective and through Peter Falk, that's the Columbo actor, through Peter Bach's perspective about how it's like corrupting his person. And I think we see that here a little bit too, where I would argue that Krimov is sort of still a true representative of the Soviet Union that could be. However, time has passed and the Soviet Union is, and now he is no longer, he is, as he fears, I would posit to you, a stepson of his time, where others have adapted and the state, as he thinks, has taken them over such to the point where they cannot, they almost seem to be inured to the passions of life, right? To the passions of the battlefront, which he still feels. And now the state itself has become its own object of okay, well, you know, the quota, the plan, all these things. It's in its own way, fills a similar role, although markedly in character, quite different than the fascist element.
Yeah, it becomes almost like tautological at some point, where what is communism? What are we working towards? Well, it's whatever the party is at that moment. And it's not possible for the party to be wrong, because the party is the essence of everything that everyone is working towards. So if you are not in alignment with the party, then you are not a communist and you have no right to, you know, exist, basically. And so that's sort of, it's, I mean, I'll say something pretty bold here. Obviously, that's bad. I know. Call back to Pitchforks. Just that it sort of gives us some insight, though, into this sort of mechanisms whereby, just lost my thought. Wait, I'll get it. It's almost coming.
You can
back.
Do it. You got it. You got this.
I had another thought and that pushed out my first good thought. Well, whatever. I'll wrap it up. Just, we get some insight into the mechanisms that the state can use necessarily, because it's almost like in some cases, can almost be a form of self-censorship in the sense that you kind of know where the boundaries are and you won't push it like on the speech. I kind of feel like it's an attempt to maybe play it safe. I don't know if it's that he really believes in grain production. I think it's that this would be a time where you don't want to say the wrong thing. And so grain production and fulfilling plans, it's a little bit safer than railing against something that might be looked back upon not too fondly.
Yeah, right.
So it's interesting in that way.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is
tough for Krimov. It's tough for old Creamy.
Yeah.
Get old.
For Comrade Cream. Yeah, it is tough.
Yeah, unless there's anything else we wanted to cover. I think that's all I really wanted to touch on today.
No, that was it for me today. In which case, I think that means you will be hearing from us again soon.